I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the head of Washington's public school system says he finally wants to crack down on teachers who are accused of sexually abusing students. Gee, what took so long? Plus, parents in Enumclaw are being told to keep their children's fingerprints on file after a violent sex offender was released into their community without notice. And another suspicious GoFundMe for an ICE detainee. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. To start the show today, we actually have to go back a couple years to understand what's going on in the state of Washington with efforts to protect students from predator teachers. So several years ago, Let's Go Washington ran an initiative that put together a parental bill of rights. It was 2024 when the legislature adopted it because they kind of didn't have a choice because there were a bunch of things going to the ballot. They didn't want this parental bill of rights going to the ballot. And so they just decided, even Democrats, they were going to pass this parental bill of rights. And it improved parental rights in a lot of different ways. And it strengthened, you know, requirements to report teachers and report things that were happening to kids at school, whether it was sexual abuse or some other sort of thing. And then what happened? Less than a year went by. The legislature reconvened after the election in 2024. And they said, you know, that bill of rights we passed in 2024, we don't actually think parents should have any rights, so we're going to undo the whole thing because they don't care about voters, they don't care about elections, they only care about themselves and their radical ideology. And so they put forth House Bill 1296, which was basically intended to undo what they had done a year earlier in passing a parental bill of rights. And so they're debating this. Now it's 2025 in the House Education Committee, and Republicans are desperate. You know, they're in the minority. They don't really have a say in a lot, but they're trying to introduce some amendments that were really designed to prove a point. You know, these amendments were like, if my child is being wants to be identified as a cat at school, like, yeah, you have to tell me. And Democrats are like, reject it. I mean, it was this display of absurdity. But one of the amendments, and you'll recall this clip because it was shared so widely, State Representative Travis Couture, a Republican, and this was a really important common sense amendment. He said, hey, you guys are trying to give schools more time to notify parents if something has happened to their child, and I don't think that's right. Here's the clip.
The underlying bill essentially states that schools can wait 48 hours before they tell parents if their children were involved in any kind of criminal action or if there was any sexual misconduct of staff. We have seen a stunning amount of sexual misconduct and sexual assaults by educators in our schools just in the last year itself, including two principals in a Vancouver school district that hid from parents a rape, a statutory rape of a 16-year-old female student in their school by one of their staff. Now, as a parent myself, I would be disgusted and sickened to know if my kids had some kind of sexual abuse put upon them by staff, and I wasn't notified immediately of those things. Now, this happened actually in my kids' school district where an eighth-grade school teacher was grooming and having inappropriate sexual relationships with eighth grade boys. This is all too much commonplace, and parents deserve to know right away whenever there is any kind of criminal activity or sexual abuse or sexual allegations of staff that goes along with the safety of their children. For God's sake, please vote yes.
They voted no. So it was this huge moment because he's just saying, like, look, if my child's being sexually abused by a teacher or there's evidence, you have to notify me immediately, not have a 48-hour buffer to what? Hide the evidence? To protect the teacher's reputation? And Democrats on that committee turned around and rejected it. And it just showed in that moment, wow, how ideological they are, how beholden to the teachers' union they are. And that one clip was shared so, it was so widespread that Democrats came back begging Republicans, hey, can we vote on that amendment again? Because we just want to undo this because the damage is just so horrific. So that is what I was thinking about this morning, as it came out that the head of Washington's public school system wants to do more about school teacher sex abuse. And I thought, like, okay, great. Awesome. I love that. But kind of what took you so long? Because these stories have been, as Travis Couture was saying in 2025, nonstop. There was just a story that was out this week, this from the Seattle Times. I also read it in the Linwood Times. Linwood teacher accused of inappropriate touching, kept in classroom for 20 months. And then just in the last 3 months, these are headlines out of Washington State. Washington teacher charged with incest after allegedly having sex with two teenage boys she adopted. St. John teacher accused of having sex with student. Olympia teacher accused of sexual harassment, still on leave nearly a year later. I mean, there's story after story after story of these allegations. And it just shows you, like, this is a real phenomenon that's happening in our schools. And it should be common sense that if there is an allegation of sexual abuse involving a teacher or a staffer against kids, that's like an immediate, you're out of the school, police know, parents know, everyone comes in. It just shouldn't be controversial. Yet it's taken this long for the superintendent of public instruction, Chris Reichdahl, to say, you know, maybe we ought to do a little bit more about this. Wow, Chris, really groundbreaking stuff. This from KUOW, a Washington schools chief seeks policy changes after teacher sexual misconduct reporting. So basically, Chris Reichdahl sent a letter to the state's Professional Educator Standards Board. The letter was on July 13th, and in it, he said that current policies limit the ability of his agency to provide adequate oversight of K through 12 school districts across the state. The 12-member governor-appointed standards board establishes the rules that OSPI is charged with implementing and enforcing. So in what ways, for instance, are they limited in how they can respond to these things? It says the changes he's requesting, if adopted by the board, would update and expand key definitions in state law, such as who is considered a student and what constitutes improper digital communication between a student and an educator. You think that would be pretty obvious, right? Do we have to absolutely spell it out for teachers what improper communication with a minor looks like? Apparently so. Other changes include expanding OSPI's authority to initiate investigations against a teacher if a district fails to report alleged misconduct, establishing a 30-day deadline for schools to report potential misconduct to the state agency, and allowing OSPI to put emergency limits on a teacher's K-12 license while they are under investigation. Now, all of that is good stuff. I would also argue, how is that not already in place? So we're talking about OSPI investigating teachers in terms of their license and their ability to teach. This is separate from criminal investigations. There is already a requirement, of course, under state law, we've talked about it a million times, mandatory reporting of criminal activity. And then because Republicans embarrass Democrats in 2025, they do have to report immediately to parents if there's something suspected where their child is a victim of a crime. But this has to do with OSPI. So a 30-day deadline. So a school has 30 days, even under these new, what he's calling kind of stricter oversight ideas that he has, a school has 30 days to let the state know and the education board and OSPI that, hey, this teacher's accused of molesting a child. You need a month? What do you need a month for? And this all shows the power of the teachers union, is they're going to do whatever they can to protect teachers, even teachers who are accused of the most egregious misconduct. And then he wants to, as I said, allow OSPI to put emergency limits on a teacher's license while they're being investigated. Yeah, their license should be taken from them as soon as the investigation begins. And look, innocent until proven guilty. But look, you're going to put them on paid administrative leave anyway until they're at least charged with a crime. And I think that's fair in a sense for a certain amount of time, innocent until proven guilty. You have people who end up making stuff up. But I think we can all agree, like, out of an abundance of caution, let's have them stay home for a few months while this is all sorted out and investigated. It's probably for the best. So I'm glad that Chris Reichdahl is noticing that we have a serious problem in this state with teachers and staff abusing students sexually. But I don't understand why we didn't already have policies in place to make sure that when those accusations happen, the teacher can't go back into the classroom. There's a speedy investigation. Schools have to notify the state. This stuff is common sense. And it takes dozens and dozens and dozens of headlines and finally some reporting on the issue from the media for Chris Reichdahl to be like, oh, I guess, you know, teacher sexual abuse is a bad thing. We ought to do more about it. But what this doesn't cover, because this specifically has to do with, you know, some misconduct allegations, but they're talking about sexual abuse, really. But there's a whole slew of other things that are also very concerning that we need to see the state start to take more seriously. For instance, we broke a story on our show, gosh, this was back in 2023, where it was an Olympia elementary school teacher basically trying to convince this young girl from India whose family had immigrated here that she was a boy, right? And so engaged in this months-long private communication with this young girl, I kept emailing you, but I was worried your mom interfered before you saw my messages. I would take you into my home anytime you need. Make sure this email is deleted so when we're done, your mom, if she looks, you won't be outed instantly. Like, that is a teacher who, that's not no accusations of sexually inappropriate contact, but it's inappropriate nonetheless, and I don't think it should be treated any differently. When you cross that line with a student, whether the motivation is sexual or not, the same sort of restrictions and punishments ought to apply. That teacher's still teaching today. We don't even know if there was ever even any punishment. Because again, the teachers union is so powerful that when there's punishment for a teacher, they say it's a personnel matter. And even though we pay that teacher's salary, we don't get to know what the punishment was for a teacher that's messaging a young girl saying, hey, you know, delete these messages so your mom doesn't see them. I'd take you into my home. And we're just told, personnel matter, Brandy, it's not your business. It is my business. And the other thing that we have to contend with, you can see the pattern of secrecy here. Because we're talking about, again, OSPI in the state now saying, oh, we need to do more to investigate the teacher's license and all of this stuff. But we know there's also issues in criminal reporting. There was just that story, national headlines, of the teacher here in Washington, or the superintendent here in Washington State, who was arrested for failing to report allegations to the police as required by law. Karen Klonginer. She was arrested, charged with tampering with a witness, failure to report, obstructing a law enforcement officer, because when these things happen, they want to handle it in-house. Oh, we don't want anyone to get in trouble, you know. I mean, we want to protect our fellow teachers. And in this case, it had to do with kids who were, like, there was an accusation that a student had sexually assaulted. It was like sort of a hazing thing, another student. And so you have this superintendent's like, nah, it's not a police matter. Let's just handle it in-house. And then she ends up, police saying, you can't do that. Getting arrested, like literally showed up and put the superintendent of that school district in Longview in handcuffs. But is anything going to happen? Is the state going to do anything to her? The climate of secrecy in our public education system is alarming because all of this is common sense. And if I were a teacher or anyone, a superintendent, I just don't understand the automatic reflex to try to be secretive. Because I'm like, I want that off my plate as soon as possible. You're saying this teacher did this, I'm going to call the police and I'm going to let the police handle it. But no, all in-house. And it's the teachers union at the center of all of it. Speaking of the teachers union, I think we might have another Paco debacle. I'm not sure, but I'm suspicious for sure. So do you remember we did this story, gosh, this is like last year sometime, when the Olympian wrote this story on a Lacey business owner abducted by ICE, according to online fundraiser. And in the news story and in the online fundraiser, they just had this nice sketch of a guy named Paco, and he was just on his horse. And they gave like virtually no details about this. And we end up using that sketch to find a real picture of the guy. And then finding out his name wasn't Paco, it was Youssef Zarate Bourbon, and he wasn't arrested by ICE. He was arrested by the U.S. Marshals because he's wanted for murder in Mexico. But of course, none of that was in the GoFundMe. It was just this sob story of like, oh, you know, Paco was taken out of the fields. He owns a farm and they just took him away. And okay, well, yeah, that wasn't the case at all. So I just have, like, my spidey senses just go up. Anytime I see any sort of GoFundMe having to do with an ICE detainee that has precious few details. And usually I wouldn't go track them all down, but the Tacoma Education Association saw fit to get involved in this one. They posted on Facebook, one of our members notified us that they have a family member detained by ICE. Let's show our solidarity by donating to cover a small portion of their legal fees. Okay, so basically a member, meaning a teacher's uncle, has been detained by ICE. That's what they're saying there. So let's read into this fundraiser again through GoFundMe. It says, hi everyone. My uncle was recently detained by ICE. He was taken into custody on Monday, July 6th, on his way home from work. He was being followed for about 7 miles along I-5 and pulled over into a gas station on exit 147. There, an ICE agent took him into custody after scanning his license plate, despite not having a signed warrant for his arrest. He's currently being held at the Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma with an upcoming court date of July 29th. Even now, he's doing his best to remain positive and ease our anxiety as we visit him. Immigration lawyers are currently very high in demand and very expensive to afford. I've reached out for support from my dear friend in setting up a GoFundMe, as I would like to stay anonymous as I can for privacy reasons. All support will go towards expenses related to his immigration case. Anything helps. Thank you so much for your support. Okay, you guys, you know, we don't have to be trained journalists. Let's look at that again, Nicole. What's some things missing here, okay? A name. There's no name of the guy who's been detained. I tend to think that's a little bit odd, right? And the woman who's his niece wants some privacy. So she says she's reached out to a dear friend, and the GoFundMe says that friend's name is Rebecca Echeverria. We'll get to more on Rebecca in a moment. But also, as someone who's been out with ICE and ERO and, you know, when they've made some of these stops, when it says he was taken into custody Monday, July 6th, he was followed for 7 miles along I-5, pulled over into a gas station, and ICE took him into custody. I know immediately that that's not some random, like, oh, is this guy brown? Let's stop and get him. I mean, that sounds a lot like they were looking for someone. They tailed him. When he pulled over, they arrested him. So that tells me that there was a reason they arrested him above and beyond him just being in the country unlawfully. And that would be enough, by the way. But just based on that, that sounds like enforcement removal operations. But of course, they're not going to say in here, oh, and here's his criminal history or whatever it is, if he has one. But here's what really got my hackles up. So it says, organized by Rebecca Echeverria. The thing says, that's not me. I want to stay anonymous, and I asked a dear friend to set this up for me. So what do we know about Rebecca? Well, Rebecca is a teacher, a school teacher in the Tacoma School District, I believe, or Bethel School District. Went to the Evergreen State College. Okay, so was a trained activist, because that's all they do at the Evergreen State College, is they train activists. Spoke at the 18th Annual Northwest Teaching for Social Justice Conference, where she was introduced as a queer Muslim teacher and parent who lives and teaches on unceded Puyallup territory. I'm sorry. I need a name. I need a name of the guy detained by ICE. Because I don't trust that this activist who went to Evergreen State College, who identifies themselves as a queer Muslim teacher who lives and teaches on unceded Puyallup territory, and speaks at teaching for social justice conferences, I don't trust that someone like that couldn't just make it all up. Not saying she did. Not saying she did. But there are precious few details in this GoFundMe, but the Tacoma Teachers Union has no problem whatsoever sharing it. I just think that people ought to know the full story before they give their hard-earned money away, like the Paco debacle. People are donating their money on this sad story that, hey, this guy owned like a shop to fix cars. He has no criminal history or whatever they said in it. He has a farm and all this stuff. And then it turns out he's an escaped, he's wanted for murder in Mexico, which is obviously a totally different story. So look, I don't know. But the problem is we have so precious few details. We even reached out to ICE and gave them the details in this GoFundMe and said, hey, you know, arrested July 6th, court date on the 29th. You know, can you find somebody that matches that? And they said, without a name, we're not able to look this up for you. So I don't know if Rebecca, if they have a name, we won't release the name. If there's nothing there, we just want to check. Because Paco de Bacos happen.
Right.
And we don't want people donating their hard-earned money to a Paco de Baco, do we, Nicole?
It's very interesting because the plea from the teachers union says one of our members notified us that they have a family member. So they're saying...
Well, yeah, they're saying that it's a teacher.
Right.
But it sounds like she asked a fellow teacher to do the GoFundMe for her. And that teacher just happens to be like a queer Muslim activist who lives on unceded Puyallup land.
And this fundraiser,
come on,
is up into the thousands. So
how much do they want? How much are they asking for?
Go back to it. Hang on.
I got time. I got nowhere to go.
Well, I don't want
that's all right. If you can't find it, that's fine. But it's up into the thousands.
I did a lot of searching this morning. But yeah, last night it was like at 700. Today it's in the thousands. So people are falling for this crap. Yeah. But I can't imagine giving to something where you have so little information.
Right.
But you see the word ICE and you're like, well, right. I'll give them money.
But that's the thing is these people don't care. They don't care if he is like a wanted murderer or anything like that, like in the case of Paco.
Because they're so
15,000.
Yes. And they're at 1,200.
My spidey senses are going off. I could be wrong. But we need a name in order to prove that this is money is going to where they say it's going. So anyway, and I know you guys are great little, you're like ferrets. You ferret it out. So if you find anything, let us know. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. First, if you are a landlord in the state of Washington, there's a lot going on right now in Seattle. They're trying to limit the amount of fees you can charge tenants in Spokane. They're trying to force landlords to install air conditioning in every single unit. I mean, I was just talking about this yesterday. I got the two Costco things.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm just a little bitter that when Mike and I remodeled our house, I'll get back to RHA in a second. We remodeled our house when I moved in with Mike, and we kind of ran out of money to do, you know, some things we wanted to do. Like we wanted to replace the driveway. We wanted to build a new deck. Like our deck is just awful. It's falling apart. And we wanted to put central air in. We just ran out of money. And I'm like, we should have just done it because it's just so
hot.
For
the 2 weeks a year?
No, I want it. But anyway, well, apparently if you're a renter in Spokane, you get AC because your tenant will have to pay or your landlord will have to pay for it. Anyway, if you're a landlord, reach out to RHA. Become a member today, the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They're your advocates. In a state where you don't have very many advocates and very many people on your side, they are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers, and they're out there kind of fighting these fights, you know, in Spokane, in Seattle, at the city level, and also at the state level, and in a court of law on private property rights. And in fact, I keep waiting for that ruling to come down on their big property rights case in the state court of appeals. And so I've been paying attention. As soon as that happens, we'll let you know. But if you're a landlord, reach out to RHA. Become a member today. RHAWA.org. RHAWA.org. All right. So on the show yesterday, we talked about this great news that Sophie Cunningham, in an expose on ESPN, she came out, and you should really read the whole article. The headline, Love Her or Hate Her, Sophie Cunningham Won't Be Ignored. It just talks about her sudden sort of rise to stardom, her background, and then people assuming that she's, you know, politically to the right when she says she's pretty in the middle. But in there, buried in there, was the revelation that she says that she wants to fight to protect girl sports and fight to protect girl spaces. And we talked about it yesterday. I'm overjoyed by it. It was all over the internet because she's so popular right now. And she's just such a cool, relatable person that I do think now that she said it, other people will come out and have the bravery to say it as well. But then, of course, on the flip side, she got a lot of hate. And part of the hate is coming from the media, where they've got to corner her and question her about this controversial statement she made when it's just, as she told them, common sense.
And you talked about wanting to protect young girls who shouldn't have to go against biological men.
How
just can you expand your viewpoint on that?
I mean, I think I said what I said. I think it's kind of common sense. And I think I'll always believe in that. I think it's really important to protect children. And that's little girls who are also involved in that category. And so I stand on what I said. And I always believe that. That's why you have Title IX. That's why you have some of the greats in women's sports. If Title IX and women's sports weren't protected, then you wouldn't hear about any type of women in sport. And so I think in the future, it's just really important to protect.
How do you, I guess, navigate a climate where whatever you say, people are going to say, well, this means you're automatically in this box or that box or this label or that label, politically, morally, whatever?
I really don't care. I know that sounds bad, and I'm not trying to come off like that. But I do think, you know, everyone always is coming at it as a negative. Well, me coming out with that, there are so many people who are coming out with the positive, saying, you know what, finally someone has said something. And I don't really look at either side of those, because I know whatever I say, I'm going to get hate and I'm going to get love. And if I'm going to live by the love, I'm going to die by the hate. And that's just not who I am. I beat to my own drum. And so people are always going to have something to say. You could win the championship. You could be the best at whatever it is. And there's still people who are going to hate on you. And so that's just what this world is. So I'm confident in who I am. I'm proud of who I am. I'm happy being me. And I'm going to continue to be that. There's, you know, going to be some negative comments, but there's also a whole bunch of positive comments too that no one really ever, you know, people hate positivity for some reason. I have no idea why, but there's a lot of positive comments too when it comes to that. And so, you know, it is what it is. Like I said, we're all human. We're no one's perfect here. And so I really don't care what other people have to say. I know who I am. My people know who I am. And hopefully I'm doing them proud and, you know, making room for young boys and girls in our world to have a better future than we did.
Lover, didn't back down, and almost gave off this air of, this is so ridiculous. It's common sense. Yeah, I'm not gonna, it's common sense. I'm looking out for girls, including young girls, and I kind of don't care what people think. And there was this tiny, it was a small part, but there was like 1% of me who thought, oh my gosh, the hate is going to be so severe, especially ahead of this sneakers launch she has tomorrow, that maybe she's going to try to backtrack. And I was like, that would be so disastrous. But she didn't. She's like, it's common sense. God, it is common sense, Sophie. It is common sense. I'm telling you, even though I think your new shoes are ugly, I am really contemplating buying a pair. I don't know. Maybe we should buy pairs for the girls who've spoken out about girls' sports in Washington. Maybe sure. We got to get Frances and Annalie and those girls some of those cool sneakers. Well, now I've said it, so now I kind of have to. So, because I know their parents watch the show. We'll talk about it later, okay? All right. Very important community of Enumclaw, but also across the state of Washington, because this can happen anywhere. So we broke the news last week about Robert Lau, who was released from a special commitment center on July 9th. And plopped into the Enumclaw community without any notice whatsoever. And they said, oh, there'll be a meeting about Lau, and the details will be put out by the sheriff's office. But at that point, they hadn't been. Level 3 sex offender. And there was some details about in this, you know, if you looked up his name. Like, somebody would actually have to go and somebody did, proactively, looking up sex offenders. Saw this guy was in their community. Said rape in the first degree in 1986. Lau was 26 when he raped a woman he met that day. He was also convicted of attempting to murder the victim. So that's all that was out there. So we end up giving that notification on Thursday. And then we come back on the show on Monday and we shared a lot more about this guy. He's a bad man. I mean, he not only did he, you know, rape this victim that he met at a bar, but he stabbed her repeatedly in the vagina and then threw her on the side of the road to die. Thankfully, she lived. But he also, as we'll get into momentarily, has a long history of disturbing behavior. And this is the kind of guy who served 30 years in prison. It wasn't enough. So they committed him to the sex offender island. And then after all of that, I think we're talking almost 50 years total. They're like, and then we'll drop him in Enumclaw and we won't tell anybody. And I just thought, oh my gosh. So we talk about this. Finally, the King County Sheriff's Office puts up a Facebook post earlier in the week saying, actually, I think they did it last Friday after our first report, saying, hey, we're going to have a virtual meeting. That virtual meeting is tonight. But also, I have a friend who lives in the area that Mr. Lau is now living. And she just got in the last couple days this flyer that came to them, just warning them, hey, sex offender notification. There's a lot that bothers me about it. So let me list a couple things. So it does talk about this online meeting that's going to be happening. But then it says his offense that got him on the sex offender registry. It says one count rape in the first degree. That doesn't tell you a whole lot about what the guy does. It doesn't even say attempted murder, because that's not the quote unquote sex crime, even though it was the victim he raped who he tried to kill. And it certainly doesn't say that he tried to kill her by stabbing her repeatedly in the vagina after he abducted her, basically. And so it gives very little information. And we know, based on the documents that we dug up about why he ended up being released from the Civil Commitment Center, we know that he was accused of molesting an underage neighbor. He has a whole lifetime of history of this kind of behavior. His sister accused him of sexual abuse and peeping. His ex-wife accused him of rape. While he was incarcerated, he attacked a fellow inmate. He put bounties on the heads of jail guards. He had drug charges. And also when he was incarcerated, they found him with a cell phone that contained depictions of child pornography. All of that. And he was still released because some therapist said, we can't prove that he's going to commit a sexual offense again. So they release him into Enumclaw, don't tell anyone. And then Enumclaw folks just find out about it on our show. And then in these little flyers that just say rape in the first degree. I mean, rape in the first degree is bad, but there's much more to this guy. Here's how bad. Flip that flyer over for a second. It has safety tips, okay? One of the safety tips is maintain current ID, photo, video, and fingerprints of your children. You guys, this guy is so disgusting and so dangerous that you're telling parents to keep fingerprints of their children on file, yet wasn't dangerous enough and a big enough threat to let them know he was going to move into their community before it happened. And to have a community meeting before he did. I've never seen anything like that. Hey, make sure you have a photo of your child and their fingerprints in case, you know, this predator snatches them off the street. Absolutely outrageous. So we have been doing a couple follow-ups on this case because of some of the things I just told you about, that when he was incarcerated, on his shirt when he was incarcerated, he had written bounties for, and he was recruiting security threat groups, which are prison gangs, gang members, to stab prison guards he didn't like. And he literally would have like $5,000 if you stab this guard, he'd name the guard. And, or, you know, $100 if you punch him. And so in my head, I'm like, well, why wasn't he, isn't that solicitation of murder? You're asking gang members to stab a prison guard, you're naming him and you're saying, I'll give you $5,000. And then that other detail of, wait, he was found with child pornography? Why isn't he still in prison? Why wasn't he prosecuted for the child pornography? So he shouldn't be in Enumclaw at all. So we've been reaching out to the Department of Corrections and the Washington State Patrol in that regard, and we do have some answers. So on the issue of the child porn, a Washington State Patrol spokesperson told us this. The Washington State Patrol received a cell phone that was located at the Special Commitment Center. And that's also a key thing I didn't know. He didn't have that cell phone in prison. He had it later, recently, at the Special Commitment. He's on Pedophile Island, you guys. And he's got a cell phone in his possession that has depictions of child porn. And they still let him off Pedophile Island. And the State Patrol says, we received this cell phone we believe to be associated with Mr. Lau. Unfortunately, by the time our investigators received the phone, the statute of limitations for filing state charges had expired. However, because Mr. Lau was a registered sex offender, our detectives consulted with a deputy prosecuting attorney who is cross-deputized with the United States Attorney's Office to determine whether federal charges were appropriate. The device was evaluated and determined to contain CSAM, so basically depictions of child abuse, but could not be connected definitively to Mr. Lau. In consultation with the prosecutor's office, it was determined that there was no actionable path forward for charging. So they basically say, like, look, yeah, he had this phone, but we couldn't definitively say that the phone had always been in his possession, that the depictions were his, etc. But it's stunning to me that that couldn't be used to try to delay his release from the sex offender island. The other thing that, of course, we're checking on is why didn't DOC charge, you know, forward charges for him soliciting the murder of prison guards? Because that's a pretty serious offense. The Department of Corrections just a few minutes ago got back to us, said they're in receipt of our request and they're looking into it. So this is not the last story that we're going to do on Mr. Lau. And we also, of course, will be monitoring the community meeting that's happening today, where the King County Sheriff's Office is going to brief the public on what exactly. Keep fingerprints of your kids on file. At this point, he's released. He's in their community. And I don't know what they do about it. And they didn't get enough warning. So I think there's going to be some pissed off parents on that meeting tonight, as there should be. All right. Coming up next. Wow. Weird. A shooting in a gun-free zone. That is strange. How does that happen? Because there's a law that says you can't bring your gun on here. It's really an enigma. We'll discuss first. If you're looking to save some money and you haven't taken a second look at your insurance in a long time, why not? I know it can sound like a big task, right? Like, oh my gosh, I got to like reevaluate my insurance, go through all these carriers. No, it is so easy. You just take the First Mark challenge. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com or give them a call, firstmarkinsurance.com, and say, hey, Brandy told me to call you and take the First Mark challenge. And they'll be like, okay, great. And they'll schedule some time, they'll go over your current insurance, they'll talk to you about your insurance needs, and then they'll go out, shop their market of carriers, come back to you with their recommendations. And for so many Undivided viewers and listeners, they end up saving hundreds of dollars a month and they hardly lift a finger. Mike and I have been with First Mark for about 3-4 years now. We love it. On this latest renewal, you know, every year it comes up, they send us, you know, like, oh, hey, how are you guys doing? We took another look at your insurance. We saved you $2,000. We're like, jeepers, what a nice, pleasant experience. And they're a local company. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The First Mark Challenge is free. Your excuses for not taking it aren't free. They're costing you money. firstmarkinsurance.com. All right, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right, gird your loins, because this is going to surprise you. So in 2024, Democrats expanded the areas where it's illegal to carry a gun. And they basically made it so that on transit and at transit stations, it's much more difficult legally to be able to have a firearm, et cetera. There are some carve outs in there. But, you know, they've been trying to expand gun-free zones in a lot of ways. I think they even included like aquariums. And I mean, it's just like these random things where it's like, they just don't want you to carry a gun. And so as you're out doing your day-to-day stuff, they want to make it very prohibitive by you'd have to like put your lock your gun in your vehicle or whatever it is. And so you're like, well, I just won't carry a gun at all. So I know it's just so surprising that given all their efforts to protect people from firearms and creating these gun-free zones, that there's still shootings in the gun-free zone. So I know it's really weird that criminals don't listen to the legislature and don't follow the law. So this is from MyNorthwest.com. Chaos erupts as passenger shot on King County Metro bus. So the victim is that guy on the left with the camouflage, who just appears to be minding his own business there. And the suspect... we have a circle around him, but I don't think you need it because you look at him and it looks like he's up to no good. Suspect is the guy on the right in the hat, okay? Rashad McKay, 36, charged with first-degree assault, illegal gun possession. Here's Cairo Radio's James Lynch talking about and showing the video.
Newly released bus surveillance video shows the moment a passenger was shot on a King County Metro bus July 5th. Prosecutors say 36-year-old Rashad Mackey argued with riders about a missing cell phone, threatened to, quote, smoke everyone on the bus, according to passengers. Then he got off and fired back in the bus as it pulled away, hitting a man in the chest. Mackey pleaded not guilty last week, wow, is being held on $5 million bail and is due back in court later this month.
Yeah, not only are they drug dens, they're death dens. I mean, if I could think of the one of the places I'd most want to be armed to the teeth, or is it to the hilt? To the tooth? Armed to the teeth. Is that it? That sounds really stupid when you say it. Teeth. It's a bus. It's a Sound Transit. And any time they make these laws and want to expand these laws, et cetera, that is pointed out to them that, okay, but the only people who are going to abide by that are the law abiding. And the criminals aren't going to. And so then you're left essentially defenseless in all these places where there's criminal elements, where there's gang members, where there's drug users, where there's mentally ill people. It makes no sense. It's just a recipe for people to get killed. It says court records show Mackey has prior felony convictions for assault and unlawful firearm possession. He was released from prison just last November. He was arrested on July 10th after reporting to a Department of Corrections office in Des Moines to meet with his DOC officer. So they identified him, but then it's so interesting. Like, he shoots a guy, but then he still goes to check in with his parole officer. It's like, okay. Prosecutors also noted that Mackey is a suspect in a separate knife assault on a bus in February, raising additional concerns about violence on public transit. He pleaded not guilty and is expected back in court July 30th. Bail set at $5 million because of his prior convictions. He could face a potential life sentence under Washington's three strikes law if convicted. Yeah, I mean, all you're doing when you expand and make it more difficult for law-abiding citizens to carry their firearm, all you do is make them targets and you make them victims because the government's not protecting them. The government's not in there like, how can we make public transit safer? No, oh, it's racist to charge people a toll. So now you got the drug addicts and the crazy people who are boarding the buses, riding them around, and then they just snap. And that's what we see all the time. I would not ride a bus for any amount of money on the planet in Seattle, King County. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. First, happening today, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, our friend Zach Abraham is having his Market Blind Spot live webinar. And if you're not doing anything, I mean, just log on and listen to what he has to say. He'll be talking about what's happening globally, a lot focused on Iran and inflation, fuel prices, also because, you know, of where we are, AI, crypto, tech, also some big topics of conversation. And as I always say, you know, get a second opinion. I think with anything we advertise on the show, now if you're, we love our friends at Valentine Roofing, but I think you should go get, you know, three quotes and come back. And I think you'll find that our sponsors are the best. Same with Firstmark, same with West Jones, etc. But you want to get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. You already have someone managing your money. It's totally free to get a second opinion. And I think that's part of this process is listening to what Zach has to say. He's my money manager. He's my mom's money manager. He's Nicole's money manager. And there's a reason for that. And he always tells it all how it is. And he's got his fingers on the pulse of what's happening. So you can sign up right now. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com for that live webinar. While you're there, if you don't have time to come to the webinar today, just sign up for a second opinion with Zach and his team. It's a free Know Your Risk portfolio review. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. All right. One quick story before we get to Florida Report today. Florida Report's so fun today. I know the video we're going to play, you've seen it, but it is the craziest misgendering meltdown of all time. And it happened in Florida. But first, Missouri suing Kansas City, the state of Missouri, alleging discrimination against white people and men. Oh, the time has come. How the turntables have turned. Missouri's Attorney General Catherine Hanaway filed a lawsuit against Kansas City, alleging programs that help business owners, businesses owned by women and racial minorities, are discriminatory toward white people and men. They are. I don't know how anybody could find that they're not. The federal lawsuit alleges that the city's Minority and Women-Owned Businesses Enterprise Program runs afoul of Equal Protection Clause, the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Hanaway, a Republican, wants a federal judge to declare the programs unlawful and permanently force Kansas City from considering race and sex when awarding contracts to third-party businesses. And this stuff has proliferated. I mean, how many programs in Washington state are explicitly based on skin pigmentation and or gender? I mean, happening right now, we'll talk about it next week. There's this reparation study that Tacoma is doing and that the state is doing. And I'm like, reparations? We already do reparations. We have the Covenant Home Ownership Program. We're based on skin pigmentation. They'll give you $100,000 toward the down payment of a house. We have the Community Reinvestment Program that'll give you free taxpayer money if you're Black. And there was all this self-dealing within that program. All of that stuff should be illegal. All of it should be illegal. And yes, helping specifically women-owned businesses, and I'm a woman-owned business, power to the people, but I don't need special help from the government. And nor do I think that that would be appropriate. And it was like Bruce Harrell, the former Seattle mayor. Downtown's what, 37% vacant? And it was a little less than that when Bruce Harrell was in office, but he was doing all these programs to try to fill the vacant storefronts downtown with Black-owned businesses. I'm like, dude, you need to take any business that wants it. White, Asian, Black, whatever it is. If somebody wants to do business downtown, you better say yes. Because all the storefronts are empty. So yeah, I hope this works, and this should be happening all over the country because this is just DEI with taxpayer funds. And I don't need white business owners or male business owners or whatever it is to get a leg up. I think that you're de facto pushing them down by taking their competition and saying, we're going to, you know, help you because you're Black or you're a woman or whatever it is. Outrageous. All right. With that, it is Thursday. That's when we check in on what's happening. All the way in the Sunshine State. It was a plane going from Washington to Florida. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
So quick update to a story we did last week on Florida Report. There was a guy hit by a truck while fleeing from ICE, and we now know a little more about him. He was on a tourist visa?
Yeah, he was in the States on a tourist visa, and he also had a purchased return flight home.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of the new information coming out. Homeland Security still hasn't really made any formal statements on this incident about what happened to the other three people in the car. Mm-hmm. And most of this information is coming from this man's family and from Mexico. Their government has made some statements, and they're the ones who identified this person as well.
Yeah. So still don't run from local police. Don't run into traffic. Don't run from ICE. That doesn't really change that for me because he made the decision to do something so dumb. But I think there's also some questions about whether he actually did intend to go back, because if you're coming in the U.S. on a tourist visa and you're from a country like Mexico where there's been a lot of illegal immigration, you've got to have a return flight or they're not even going to let you in.
Yeah.
So the existence of a return flight doesn't scream, oh, I was going to leave to me. And there's some other things weird, like his wife is working with a nonprofit dealing with farm workers to try to bring his remains back. I'm like, well, why with farm workers? So in the totality of what I'm reading, I feel like he wasn't going to go back, but he's dead. He can't defend himself. And we just will never know.
It's true. And it kind of, you know, might be one of the reasons that he ran in the first place. I'm not sure. I mean, it says that he came in to visit family and friends in Atlanta, then came to Florida to enjoy the beaches. But like you said, his wife reached out to this nonprofit that specifically deals with farm workers in Central Florida for legal reasons.
Yeah. So. And none of it is relevant to whether, like, to him being hit by a car. You know, again, there's other people in the car. You know, I stopped that vehicle. He decided to flee. And so it's just, it's a sad situation. But I mean, you know, actions have consequences. Okay, this from Fox Business. Listen up, Washington Democrats. Florida stock rising, how it became the world's 14th largest economy as blue states continue their death spiral. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, it definitely sounds about right. I mean, as much as our population growth has kind of stabilized since after the pandemic, the influx of income is constant and rising. Yeah. This article talks about it coming in at like $4 million worth of income every hour, 24 hours a day coming into the state of Florida.
$1.8 trillion economy now. And look, when you message that we're open for business versus we're going to punish business, the results are obvious. And you see a lot of tech, and Miami's been working very hard for years, really, to try to lure tech away from places like Seattle as we were taxing high-paying jobs, et cetera. So not a surprise that they're succeeding in the way they are.
Not at all. We have a big welcome mat for businesses and people who would like to come to Florida, enjoy our sunshine and lower taxes.
And no welcome mat for illegals. Gone. All right. I've been dying to play this all week, but I was like, oh, we'll wait till Florida Report, because this happened at the University of Central Florida. So apparently this incident itself had happened like a little bit ago, but the video, the body camera video that the whole internet is talking about, and I've watched the whole thing, it's like 12 minutes. It's absolutely glorious. I would encourage anyone to do it.
Yeah.
It's so the background a little bit, like police came to the college for like the report of a stolen vehicle. Is that it?
Yeah, so there was a couple things happening. Police came to the campus on a report of a stolen vehicle. While they were there, there was an incident happening in one of the student centers where I guess this individual we're about to watch was being harassed by people and causing a commotion. And then the police officer came in to try to de-escalate the situation, which didn't go.
There's no de-escalating this. Before we play it, this sums up, and we've truncated it quite a bit. This sums up everything that the radical left has done to young people in America. It's like made them feel entitled, broke their mental health, you know, made them put them out of touch with reality. I mean, this is a trans, it's a man who thinks, it's like a blue wig on, says that it's that they're a woman. And the cop is not using their preferred gender pronouns. Here it is.
I am not supposed to be here.
If you don't lower your voice, I am going to put handcuffs on you, and I'm going to take you to a Baker Act facility. You lower your voice.
Try it.
Are you threatening me? I ain't got time to hear you screaming and yelling.
I don't have time to constantly be abused.
We'll get, can we get another unit to deal with Jay Lee here? He is having a breakdown.
Say! Just say the right pronoun! Hey! Me!
Yeah, lower your voice.
Leave me alone!
No, it's too late. It's too late now. He's going to be taken away.
Say!
Jay Lee, you need to stop. I understand that.
Shay! Stop mass jiggling me! Just say Shay!
Josh, can you please just tell them to use the right pronouns? Please! You know it's causing me a lot of distress.
I need you to spray him.
I'm gonna spray him.
No, please don't spray. Don't say him. Her.
Okay, her. I'm going to spray her.
Thank you.
Put your hand behind your back.
No.
I'm going to spray her. Thank you. So I was more like upset by the idea of I'm going to spray him than getting sprayed with pepper spray. I mean, clearly that is somebody in a mental health crisis. And we see this so much with, you know, the trans community and this, oh, you must. Like, that was the main anger point is you're not calling me. It's clearly me. I love this cop, by the way.
Yeah.
That's a Florida cop. If a Seattle cop talked like that to a trans person, they'd be fired the next day. But he's just like, I don't have time for this.
I do think, like, when you watch the whole video, the cop tried very hard to to de-escalate. And he really did not want to pepper spray or tase this person. There was multiple chances for him to do it. And there's one point where he points a taser and he pulls the trigger and he's like, this is going to happen to you.
Yeah.
And he's like, and the kid just didn't care. And he did end up getting pepper sprayed and tased and taken into custody. And at the very end, you hear these officers talking about that this person is in a crisis and they need help. They can't go to General Pop or they'll eat him alive there. So, like, I do believe that he wound up getting Baker acted and hopefully got the help that he needed to come down from what is clearly a mental situation.
Yeah, he was charged with battery. He was charged with battery on a law enforcement officer and disorderly conduct. And you also have to consider this is within a school environment and you have someone losing their mind like that. And so officers couldn't just walk away. It's like, what is going to happen? And so just outrageous. But again, this is what the radical left has done. This turned these brains into Swiss frickin' cheese.
Yeah.
All right, Miranda. Well, I'm happy that some of this happens in Florida. It does give me a slight bit of joy that you experience a little bit of it.
Yeah, for sure. We're not immune, but I think we just have a better way to handle things by actually handling things instead of pretending they're not happening.
For sure. All right. We'll see you later.
Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Yeah, I'll have more to say about that in just a moment. We're going to poll subscribers on using someone's preferred gender pronouns. And actually, some of your answers surprised me. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, even if it's maybe 6 months down the road, you're just starting to dream about maybe leaving the state and moving somewhere else, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, and you can achieve the same results that you would have been able to get a couple years ago. You just might have to be more strategic because there's just a lot of listings on the market right now. So yours has to stand out. Well, that's what Wes and his team specialize in. So go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. You can peruse listings that his team has been able to sell with clients and just take a look at how they market the home. And these things really, really matter. I mean, if you go on to any app that has home listings, your eyes gravitate towards the ones that are marketed well. And between photos and videos and immersive tours of homes, I mean, Wes and his team, they do it all. And it also comes down to staging, cosmetic upgrades to the home. But I think really the first thing you're going to want in this home, in this market, housing market, is just a lay of the land. You know, Wes has been doing it in the area for a long time. And so he's going to know down to your neighborhood what it's going to take to get the most possible value out of your home and how long that could take in this market. So reach out to Wes, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, and start by just saying, Wes, Brandy told me to call you. Can you give me a market analysis and just tell me what my expectations should be in this market? And he'll take good care of you. All right. I asked subscribers based on that video out of Florida. Now, I have a kind of two thoughts about this, but will you use someone's preferred gender pronouns if they ask you to? Now, I think that cop, this might be unpopular, I think he should have just said she. Because as a police officer, your goal has to be to constantly
de-escalate.
And clearly that was not working, like saying he. It was probably an accident at some point, but then I'm like, at that point, just say, I'm so sorry, she, I won't do that again. Mm-hmm, can we just calm down? So I do think the officer, for the sake of the contact and for the sake of the safety of everyone around, should have just said,
oh yeah, in this situation, absolutely. Because you never want to escalate a situation. So my theory
general
situation would be, in our work situation, I believe we're reporting on the news, and it is not necessary to use preferred pronouns.
It's a lie.
Yes. Right. When I'm in a situation, if somebody is being respectful to me, I'll be respectful to them and do whatever they want as far as pronouns. And I just think that's the way probably it should be. I think that in a school situation, I was really trying to debate this one. But if I was a teacher, I mean, I guess you're forced to use the preferred pronouns, but that would really bother me because
they're not your kid.
Yeah, it's not. So I think I avoid it in those situations. Then I would just avoid pronouns entirely.
Yeah. Most of you say no, 75% or so, but 25% say yes, you would. I think I come down pretty close to where Todd Welch is at. He says, I use him or her, but not them. It is just easier than getting into an argument with someone that I really don't care about. To your point, Nicole, never on the show, because especially we're talking about like crime and things like this. I'm just not doing that. But what I will do is just use their name. Like, for instance, let's say it's a city council member. We had one at one point, right, that went by they, them, or it was a candidate, I think. I'm not going to use they, them. Nikita Oliver. When Nikita Oliver ran for mayor, Nikita Oliver was using they, them pronouns.
No.
And I was on Fox 13 at the time. And they were like, yeah, you have to say they, them.
Just not proper.
No, I just say Nikita Oliver.
That's ridiculous.
So I just use a name because it's just confusing, right? But if it's just a one-off situation where it's like, I'm in, you know, I'm never going to see this person again, fine. It's easier than getting in an argument. Diana Mo says, nope, I live in truth and reality and I won't be forced to play along with those who choose not to. Yeah, definitely if it's not something I'm around all the time, I'm just going to call them by their name. Because you can avoid using pronouns entirely if you really want to.
Exactly.
B. Larson, I just want to address them by anything other than their name. I'm not going to lie for them. And I do feel bad for, I think there are people who've chosen to live their lives as a different gender and they don't want anything from anybody.
Exactly. Like, I know
what I'm doing.
I know people like
yes.
that.
Yes. And then in those cases, it's like, hey, I respect that. You're living your best life. You're not asking anybody to do anything. And those aren't the kind of people who would lose their mind if you misgendered them. Right. They'd probably just brush it off.
They were trans before trans was cool.
Yes. Yeah. Matthew Cook, I will address that person by name. If an issue were to arise, I will explain my beliefs are based in biology and that it's not my job to affirm someone's feelings. Don's wife. I like that. Yeah. I'm just... Don's wife. So far, I haven't been faced with this, but I would try to use the person's name instead of pronouns. I'd feel like a hypocrite if I use pronouns that is the opposite of their biological reality. So a lot of people like that. I'll use their name, even if it sounds odd.
That's another thing I'll do is just say the person. Like that officer could have just said this person.
Yes.
This person.
He knew the name, person. Right? He knew the name.
But when he was trying to report to somebody instead of saying he...
Now, at the same time, if the officer is trying to relay the description of someone, like I've got a male, you know, 5'9".
Then I would say transgender.
Right. And then person. It's like, you have to be descriptive. Mm-hmm. But that officer, although funny, should have de-escalated the situation better. All right. On some comments from the live stream on the school chief suddenly wanting to take sexual assault of students seriously, De Pluribus Unum says, usually they just move them to another school and say they don't teach here anymore. Yeah, because they teach down the road.
Right. It is wild how many of these stories that I get word of. I mean, only a small fraction of them make it into the news, into the headlines. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the little montage that we had is just the last 3 months. And that's a small percentage. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yep.
It's scary. Weiss Castle says 48 hours in is communicated as an absolute maximum time that I can live with it, but it must include actual punishments if 48 hours is ever exceeded.
48 hours seems way too long to me. 2 full days to tell a parent their child might have been molested. I'm not down with that.
No,
I'm not down with that at all.
Because in that time, this kid's living, having to carry another secret. You're just
right. And gives them time to hide evidence.
Yeah, you're just hurting them more.
and this next name is actually very appropriate. Right meow. I want it reported right meow. Right meow says, right meow. Just reminds me of Super Troopers. I love that show so much. Mm-hmm. I don't like that my kids had provided their teacher with their personal cell phone number for these reasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your teeth, you know, if you want to talk to my kid outside of school, you talk to me.
Use the app. There's an app for that.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the schools have apps and the kids can message the teacher through the app. So there should be no reason to exchange personal cell phone numbers that the parents or who or the school or whoever can access. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. On the Tacoma Teachers Union soliciting donations for the ICE detainee, Patty, you want to read Patty?
She says, you can't be a queer Muslim person. There are no queers in the Muslim religion. These people are so weird.
It's like a white queer Muslim. I'm like, what is going from? I went to Evergreen State College. These are the people.
She identifies as a queer
Muslim.
These
are the people teaching your kids. Felicific.
And specifically, she's in the Tacoma School District, and she is a ESL interventionalist.
Whatever that means. I want to see the inside of her classroom.
So I'm told it's like a SPED class.
Gotcha. Okay. Felicific Cappuccino. Unfortunately, in today's climate, there are way too many GoFundMe frauds. People do that all the time when there's a national disaster. More information is needed. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I want to be anonymous. That's great. But you're also asking for $15,000. So maybe being anonymous isn't a good idea.
And I'm going to reach out to GoFundMe and check on how they verify something like that. Like, if that much information is missing, how do they verify that?
Well, I think they rely on community reports. Mm-hmm. Because remember, when we reported the Paco thing, they pulled it down and said it didn't meet their standards. All right, some super chats for the Sophie Cunningham Shoe Fund. Okay, then we're going to do it. We're going to get, I don't think there's a problem with me doing that, right? We're going to buy sneakers for Francis and Annalie.
Yep.
For sure. I feel like I'm missing a few, but those are the ones we've been the closest with.
Yep.
And it'll be from the undivided family.
Callie.
Oh, and Callie Keeler. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Yes. That was a boys girls sports issue. It was more of a crime issue. Okay. So we'll reach out to them, get their size. And I think that these super chats from Old Sub Sailor, Son Miller, Big Princess, H Bunnies, Kathy, JMPNW, Matthew Cook, and SLK, will pay for a good chunk of it.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
You're getting credit.
Oh, my niece. Okay, I'll make them send us pictures with their new shoes. I'm so excited.
Hopefully they want them.
Well, listen, I even want some, and I'm not a big, you know, pink and blue. I also think it's interesting that the shoes are like the trans flag color. It's like kinda pink and light blue.
Yeah, but it's hot pink. It's hot pink.
Okay. I love that. Okay, on the Enum Claw sex offender alert being sent out.
Oh, me? Sure. SB South says, yet the party that runs the state has the nerve to call Donald Trump a pedophile. Meanwhile, they're letting pedophiles go free here in Washington State.
Yeah, I mean, that's someone who has such a disturbing history. And like I said, I understand people have constitutional rights. Not everyone can be in prison for the rest of their life. But letting a community know ahead of time so they can plan and push back if need be. But that's what the government doesn't want. They don't want the community to have enough notice to get upset.
I'm not sure they could have done anything at the point that it came. I mean, I don't know that anybody was expecting that doctor to just be like, nope, he's good. I mean,
I don't know.
It's a scary situation, but I think that's a system breaking down right there, because that is not the correct decision.
Yeah. On the Metro Rider shot and gun free zones in Washington, Greg, I'm sorry, but all the places that are gun free zones are the exact places where a gun needs to be carried. Yeah. And I'm learning a lot about this. So as you guys know, I'm taking lessons at Security, which is such a nice, we got to get them to be a sponsor on the show.
Security.
Well, because it's got and so I always went like Security. And it's so fancy that I feel as if, because they made this place for like, this isn't an ad. It's just, they made this place so that, not that it's for women, but they wanted a place that was like nicer, higher end, where that women mm-hmm. could come with their husbands and feel comfortable and stuff. And it's just so freaking nice. But I'm taking lessons there. William Kirk with Washington Gun Law set it up, and he's going to give me afterwards the legal lessons. And I have so many questions about stuff like this. Like, you know, if I want to bring my gun with me, because my goal is to just carry every day and to feel comfortable carrying every day. But then you're thinking about, okay, but what if I'm going to these places and I can't bring it? And then I've got to lock it up in my car. And there's just so many laws that you have to be aware of to be a responsible gun owner. All right. You want to read that last one?
On Florida Report, Necro Two Shoes says that hair dye from the dollar store is rotting their brains.
That was actually a wig, I believe, because in the mugshot, he didn't have it on. And so they made him take his blue wig off for the...
Of course it was blue.
Yes. Nicole Wipes. Terrible. All right, Nicole, thank you. And with that, let's get, I don't want to say goodbye to you guys. I'm having so much fun. Let's get to our closing sanity check. You know, I just have to end the show with this today because I think it sums up so much of what we encourage on this show all the time, which is just be brave, speak truths, stand your ground. And I just wanted to end the show with just that little clip of Sophie Cunningham faced with reporters saying, yeah, I do believe in protecting girls' sports.
I mean, I think I said what I said. I think it's kind of common sense. I really don't care what other people have to say. I know who I am. My people know who I am. And hopefully I'm doing them proud and, you know, making room for young boys and girls in our world to have a better future than we did.
Yeah. In a world of Megan Rapinoe's, be a Sophie Cunningham. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. If you're not a subscriber, we'd love to have you start joining us on Sundays with subscribers. It's $5 a month to support the show. I feel like we pack a lot in to the show that's worth $5 a month. If you go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, you just click on the banner there that says support the show. And yeah, you'll be signed up, join our growing community, talk to like-minded people, participate in our daily show polls, subscriber Q&As, get the first invites to things, and just support the work that we're doing. That's it. Subscribers, we'll see you Sunday. The rest of you, we will see you Monday. Wait, is Monday a holiday? No. I don't even know what day it is.
No, where are you going?
What month is it? It's been a long week. Okay, bye.